So we're back for another episode of the Fried Egg Podcast, and this week we're really excited to have PGA Tour player and golf course architecture fanatic Zach Blair on the podcast. Zach is heading into his third year on the PGA Tour, and he is also, you know, has aspirations of building his own golf course, which is going to happen, called the Buck Club. So he, you know, kind of fits perfectly with what the Fried Egg's all about, PGA Tour talk and architecture. So, Zach, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
So, you know, with you in a lull here with the PGA Tour season, kind of, you know, in the silly season, what are you doing these days to keep yourself busy?
I mean, honestly, right now, just kind of taking care of regular stuff in life, you know, getting ready for the holidays, shopping a little bit, and just kind of hanging out with family and friends, but getting ready to get it back going. So excited about that.
Cool. So what's the golf season like in Utah these days? Like in November and December, is it kind of non-existent?
I mean, you know, up until 2 or 3 weeks ago, it was actually pretty nice. I mean, it was around 60 degrees, which is, I think, pretty seasonably warm for around here. But it's snowing now, so not too much golf here at the moment. But that's kind of nice to be able to get a break from it.
Mm-hmm. Do you kind of try and stay sharp with a winter? Do they have, like, winter facilities or anything there?
Yeah, we just live right down the road from BYU, so, you know, when I want to go practice, I kind of just hop in there at the indoor practice facility with the golf team out there at Brigham Young. So that's pretty nice to have when I need it.
Yeah, it's nice that you're right by old stomping grounds. So
yeah, exactly.
I'd love to hear a little bit about, you know, your story, about how you got into golf. I know you know your father had a big influence into that, and you know, going from college, you're one of the, you know, rare guys that earned a PGA Tour card in less than a year. So I'd love to hear a little bit about your journey to the PGA Tour and how you got started in golf.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, my dad was a big influence in my life and in, you know, golfing with. With everything going on, I kind of just followed him around. He let me kind of caddy and stuff like that in, you know, Utah section events or state opens and stuff. So I just kind of followed him around and just, you know, like a lot of kids do, just tried to copy their dad. And so it worked out and kind of took a liking to it. Maybe, you know, sometime in junior high or close to high school is when I really you know, thought about doing it seriously. I mean, I'd been around it my whole life, so I thought I might as well not give it a try. And, yeah, so it worked out. I went to BYU, and like you said, I was able to graduate and get my tour card that year following graduation, which was always nice. But I kind of took a different route than a lot of people. I turned pro after Q school, actually. I went to Q school as an amateur and made it to finals, but kind of had a, you know, an average tournament. I think I finished somewhere in the middle of the pack, around 70th or something like that. So I was actually just going to stay amateur another year until I saw some of the people that finished, you know, where I finished at Q school were getting starts on the PGA Tour Latin America with how they'd finished at Q school with their status.
Mm-hmm.
So I told my dad, you know, I asked him if he thought that would be a good idea. And, you know, he basically just told me, yeah, you can do what you want, but you got to make sure you graduate. So I had to go down and play on the PGA Tour Latin America and graduate at the same time, which was, it was a little difficult, but I was able to make it work. And, basically, I played pretty good down there for half the season. They take a break in the middle of the summer, so that was opened it up for me to be able to go play in a couple of web.com events. I was able to get a sponsor's exemption into Utah, and I was able to get into the Nova Scotia web.com tour event because I think there was like a hurricane or something that was supposed to hit up there, so a bunch of people withdrew. And since I had conditional status, I was able to reshuffle in and kind of play the last half of the web.com tour season and was able to get into the finals and get my card. So it all worked out. It was pretty awesome.
Yeah, that's it's kind of a cool story. It's a unique one in the sense that, you know, you stayed amateur for a while. And, you know, you did, it's so many guys come up with the conditional status. With Q School this week, I'd love to hear a little bit about, you know, your experience going through it, and kind of just the pressure of each stage and kind of what it's like. And obviously you were an amateur, so you were in a little bit different boat, but I'd love to hear a little bit about, you know, Q School.
Yeah, so for me, I had to go through every stage. I had to go pre-qualifying, first, second, and finals. So, man, it was an exciting ride. I played pretty well at pre-qualifying, I remember. Kind of made it through that fairly easy. And then first stage, I got off to, just a horrendous start. I think I shot 41 or 42 on my opening nine. I was just like basically shot myself in the foot coming out of the gates, but I was able to kind of rein it in and have a last, I had a great back nine, I think, on the final day to end up making it on the number. So that was nice to get through there. And then second stage again, I kind of, played pretty well and got through, pretty easily. And then final stage, I don't really know. I just played very average. Obviously, there's a lot of good players there. And, I didn't have my best stuff that week. And I finished like 70, mid-70th, middle of the pack. But I do remember I birdied my last three holes the final day to finish where I finished. And,
huge,
if you look
right
back on it, that was, that was everything, because that was what made me able to get into those PGA Tour Latin America events. And it was what helped me get into those, that event in Nova Scotia on my number and a bunch of other stuff. And it just kind of goes to show that every shot kind of counts. And it could all be different if I kind of just threw in the towel.
Yeah. I think that the Q School is one of the most undercovered events in all of golf. It's kind of fascinating. You see these guys that were college phenoms, that are, fighting for their livelihoods, and guys that are on the brink of hanging up the clubs. Just seeing these guys under the, ultimate pressure is crazy. It should definitely get more coverage.
Yeah, I think, like you said, it definitely doesn't get the attention it deserves. I think a little bit has been taken away from it now that you don't get right out on the PGA Tour. So I think they kind of overlook it even more now. It's a really cool event. I know they changed it to four rounds, a couple years ago. But, those are some of the biggest rounds these guys will ever play. So it's pretty good. It's pretty fun to watch. I got a lot of friends that do it every year. So, good luck to all of them. Hopefully they play well.
Yeah. I got a buddy that's in it, hoping he can lock down full status. It's, conditional. It's tough when you don't know when you're getting your next start. You were,
exactly.
Lucky to get through and get into that reshuffle. So, with 2017 and kind of the break, curious how you go about building your tournament schedule for the year. Do you like to block it out where you have a couple weeks on the road and then some weeks off? Do you pick certain courses? Do you look at, your past performance? Love to hear a little bit about how you build your schedule.
Kind of all of those things that you said, I try and do, but, everybody that knows me knows that I play a lot. So, I go into the first 2 years I got out here, I kind of set. I want to play as much as I can, kind of see what courses I like, what courses I play well at, and, you know, then start building a schedule from there. And then so this year I kind of went into it, you know, the same way, thinking that I wasn't going to play as much. But, I mean, I just love to play golf, so it's kind of hard for me to say I want to take this week off or that week off. But we'll see. I mean, this year I kind of have the plan to, you know, not play more than four in a row, and, you know, be able to get my rest. And I, like you said, I like to see kind of my past performances and see how I've played at certain places or see what courses set up well for me. Obviously, I like any course that's a par 70, you know, not as many par fives and stuff like that. But all the courses, under the right conditions, I feel like I can play well at. So I'm just excited to kind of get back out there and get playing.
Any new stops that you're kind of looking forward to that, you know, maybe new courses on the schedule?
I don't know if they're – the only new course that I can think of is that I think Tiger or the – what event is that? That's usually at Congressional.
Yeah, the Quicken Loans.
Yeah, the Quicken Loans I think might be at TPC Potomac this year, which that's my wife's hometown. So that should be fun to go out there and play that.
Other than that, I don't know if there's any new one too, right?
Oh, yeah. Wells Fargo at Eagle Point. Yeah, I've heard a lot of good things about that place. So, yeah, definitely looking forward to that. Quail Hollow is always a sweet spot, so hopefully, you know, I can make the PGA there again. And but, yeah, definitely looking forward to those two stops this year.
Yeah, what are your some of your favorite spots in general, whether it be a golf course or town or, you know, combination?
They're all pretty good, but definitely Muirfield, you know, Jack's tournament is pretty unbelievable. The golf course is always set up awesome, and you know, the town's great. You know, there's some good places for food you know, every week it seems like, but I mean, man, there's not too many bad weeks out there. Every week kind of, you know, does the right thing to hopefully try and differentiate themselves and try and get good fields. So, I mean, we get taken care of pretty good, and we play a lot of good golf courses, so it's tough to pick.
So what's your take on the new format for the Zurich?
Yeah, I think that should be really cool. Looking forward to that for sure. I didn't play Zurich last year. Had some stuff going on and kind of worked out in our favor. I guess the weather down there was, you know, a nightmare. So looking forward to getting back down there. You know, they got some good food down there. The golf course is cool, and that'll be a good format. It's, you know, I wish we could play stuff like that a couple more times a year, but we'll see how it goes this year.
What, you know, you hit the, you know, kind of nail on the head with it, playing more different stuff. What other types of formats would you like to see? Beyond just the partner best ball or alternate shot, is there any other types of formats you'd like to see more of?
I mean, I think I would love to see match play, you know, in an event other than that World Golf Championship. I think that would be really cool. The Stableford format is really neat, I think, as well. So I think that's another one that I think should be maybe utilized one time in the fall and then, you know, the one in Reno. And then, like I said, I think if we played Stableford twice a year, the best ball tournament twice a year, and match play twice a year, I think, you know, it would be a lot of fun and kind of spice things up, you know, instead of just playing stroke play every week. Because, like, as you know, golf was, you know, built on more than just playing stroke play. And you know, a lot of those, you know, people that grow up, you know, in England and Europe play match play a lot. So I think it's definitely a different format and fun. So I think if we could do that more, it'd be awesome.
Yeah, I think it's just more relatable to the everyday golfer also, because, you know, your weekend warrior very rarely just goes out and plays, you know, stroke play when he plays with his foursome. It's usually some sort of team format or match play.
Yeah.
You know, it's
yeah, for sure.
So I think it brings a little bit more fan appeal into it as well. So I have to, you know, ask about, you know, the golf world's buzzing about Tiger Woods' return. Did you watch much of it? And if so, what'd you think?
Yeah, I mean, I was able to watch a little bit of it. I was playing this little member guest tournament back in Sea Island, so we were kind of playing while they were playing. But, you know, I saw some highlights and stuff like that, and, I mean, everybody that knows me knows how much I like Tiger, so it was obviously nice to see him back playing. And, I mean, he played well, you know. You could just tell he was just a little rusty, you know, not in tournament form. And, you know, it was pretty evident that he probably just doesn't have the stamina right now in his first week back to kind of, you know, play all the practice rounds and the pro-ams and all the tournament rounds. You know, it's kind of a, you know, it's probably a pretty stressful week for him, but it was cool to see him make some birdies and, you know, make that run that second day. And it was nice to see him back because golf definitely needs him.
Yeah. I mean, first event back and you're also the host has to be just
dream. Yeah, for sure. You know, it was I couldn't imagine doing that. So it was good to see him back.
Yeah, yeah. I think the birdies are a telling statistic with anybody.
For sure.
You know, it's not like he was making a ton of long putts. He was hitting the ball close, and that says a lot. And you know, you eliminate a lot of the mistakes, and all of a sudden he's up in the top five. So
yeah, exactly.
So, you know, kind of what are your goals now going in? You know, I guess we're in the middle of your third season now, but, you know, going into 2017, do you have any kind of cemented goals for the upcoming season?
Yeah, I mean, some of them would just be, you know, you obviously want to keep your card and make the playoffs. I would love to qualify for two or three of the majors this year, and you know, the ultimate goal is to win out here. So those are kind of three goals that are at the top of my list, and hopefully I can get those done this year.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, a win's a great thing. You know, it's amazing how many kind of doors it opens up, whether it be getting into the Masters, the 2-year exemption. I mean, it's, that is the ultimate prize.
Yeah, it is.
So,
it's pretty good.
Yeah. So let's move on kind of towards to golf course architecture and golf courses, and let's start with the one project that's near and dear to your heart, the Buck Club. And we've met up this summer, and I wrote something just a little bit about the inspiration behind it. But for people that didn't read it, I think it'd be great to just kind of tell the story of, you know, the Buck Club and where you're at with it, and we'll kind of go from there.
Yeah, I mean, the whole idea about the Buck Club is just to kind of have a really good old school, you know, golden age architecture type golf course in Utah with that, you know, that vibe or that feel that everybody likes when they go to their favorite courses. I just think Utah has a really big golfing fan base, or whatever you would call it. There's a lot of good golfers here, a lot of people that love golf. And I just think we're missing a really, truly great golf course in Utah. We have a lot of good golf courses, but I don't think there's a golf course in Utah that people from, you know, back east or California would make their way to Utah specifically to play that golf course. So, you know, basically just trying to put together this little project and get a nice national membership of, you know, good guys that love golf and appreciate good golf courses. And I just think it would be something cool to have.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. It's I think the, you know, Denver has some good golden age architecture, but for the most part, if you look at kind of from really Kansas west, it's kind of like a dead spot where it got passed over in the 20s when most of those courses were being built, and all the courses got built in kind of the dark ages. So
yeah.
We
got plenty of those here. So
yeah, there's a lot of. I mean, I think that Arizona is another example of that. They have some really good courses there, but they also have some very, very bad ones.
Yeah, it happens. That's for sure.
Yeah, but in terms of kind of where you're at with the project, you know, and in terms of influences architecturally, why don't you kind of share that?
Yeah, I mean, again, anybody that knows me knows how big of a fan of Seth Rayner and C.B. McDonald I am. So those are two, you know, huge influences. But, I mean, anybody from the Golden Age, whether it's, Perry Maxwell, Donald Ross, Alistair McKenzie, you know, Colton Allison, any of those guys. I mean, George Crump, you know, he did one course and he did it right, and it's still the, you know, number one course in the world. So anybody that was associated with that timeline that built those golf courses that we all know about that are so great, I mean, I've pulled things from, you know, every one of their golf courses, you know, the great aspects of each of them, and tried to put it into one golf course without it being cheesy or, you know, one of those courses that's trying to emulate a different hole or something like that from other golf courses. I've just tried to take the best things that each course can offer and just kind of change them in my own way to make it great.
Yeah, that's cool. I mean, I think that's the way to go. And I think another thing that we've talked about is, you know, restoring these courses to the original shot, you know, value. So
yeah, for sure.
That, you know, you've got Redans where people have to hit long irons into.
Yeah, exactly.
Nowadays you play a lot of these places and it's a mid to short iron in, and, you know, that kind of defeats the purpose of it.
A perfect example of that was I played Piping Rock this year, and there was a new back tee on their Beerus green, and I can't remember how long it was, but I want to say it was like, you know, it was to a back pin, and it was around like 260 or 265 or 270 or something like that. And I mean, I teed up a driver low and just hit, you know, a low chaser that kind of landed on the front part and rolled down the little swale and came back up. And I just thought, like, how cool was that? Because, I mean, that was how they intended that hole to be played, with a long, you know, a long shot in, like a driver or a fairway would. So, I mean, like you said, you kind of hit the nail on the head. I definitely want my course to play to the shot values that they were originally intended. You know, you want long irons into redans, and you want short irons into short greens, you know, stuff like that. So, that's definitely another key point that I'll try to make happen at my course. And, you know, if I can do those things, I think it'll be pretty great.
Yeah. So how did you get into architecture in the first part with, you know, just growing up? Obviously, you know, a lot of golfers aren't into it. I think it's growing, but I'd love to hear how you, you know, got such a love of architecture at such an early age.
Again, my dad, you know, he was a club pro, and he ran a couple of, you know, just like regulation nine golf courses, and he designed them and everything like that. They're called Mulligan's Golf and Games in Utah, and they were, you know, they were just little nine hole courses, but he did all the design work and stuff like that. So, I mean, I just grew up watching him, you know, doing all these drawings and all these sketches. And then later on, you know, a few years back, he got involved in redoing a couple of courses down in Southern Utah. And so again, I just kind of, you know, would always see him doing the sketches and, you know, having his routings and all his maps and stuff like that. And like I said earlier, I just kind of always wanted a copy and be like my dad. So it kind of came pretty easy. Me just kind of sitting next to him, drawing golf holes. And, you know, as you grow older, the interest got a little bigger and did a little more research and studied a little more and, you know, got to where I am today.
Cool. You know, I know you are a big reader on architecture. So, you know, what are some of your favorite architecture books, and, you know, what's next on your list of things to read that you haven't gotten to yet?
Oof, I'm not sure. There's so many of them. I've gotten a lot of books over the last couple of years. The Evangelical Golfer, that is a really cool book. You know, if you like C.B. McDonald and Seth Rayner, it talks about all their courses and stuff like that. Man, I wish I was in my little library right now so I could read off some other ones. But I don't know. I can't really name too many that I like live and die by besides that book. I love that book.
Yeah, that one's
but,
the best.
You know where I read a lot? I just read a lot of stuff online though too. Just random stuff about golf courses. You know, I'll hear about a golf course and find it online and kind of read up on it. And then, you know, just I'd like to talk to my dad, and I like to talk to other architects just about it, kind of see what they have to say. So it's just kind of a combination of a lot of different sources where I like to learn from.
I think obviously the best way to study architecture is seeing great architecture in action at the golf courses. So, you know, what were some of your favorite courses that you saw this year? And like the other question, you know, do you have any ones that you're really excited about lined up for 2017, or places that are on the, you know, must-see list?
For me this year, I was able to get to a lot of good spots. So I'm sorry if I miss any that offend somebody. But I was able to go a couple of them that were really awesome to me. Chicago Golf Club and Fisher's Island. Yale was really cool. Those are all C.B. McDonald and Seth Rayner spots. So, again, you know, you can see how much I love those guys. But, man, where else did I play? Man, I went to so many places that I forget. But, I mean, I really loved Chicago Golf Club, like, a lot. It was a really cool day, and just to see that place was pretty special. But some places I'm excited for this upcoming year, I don't usually, like, set anything up until kind of, like, that week before I'm going to go. But, you know, I really want to see Shore Acres. I've heard that's a good spot, and I really want to see Marion. Never been out there, and a couple of my friends, you know, tell me it's a must see. So I really need to get out there, and obviously, you know, like Augusta, that would be a nice one to go see. Really, have always wanted to see Yeaman's Hall, another Seth Rayner, Country Club of Charleston, and then, I mean, God, there's too many to name. Honestly, I really want to see Myopia Hunt up near Boston.
Yep.
That's kind of one that I've just, like, wanted to go to so bad. I wasn't able to make it to the Deutsche Bank this year, so I was pretty bummed because I was going to go and check that out. But, I mean, every week somewhere where you go has a great spot, so I always like to go and check those out and see what each place has got going on. So I'm sure I'll find some good ones this year.
Yeah, that's Shore Acres is my favorite golf course I've played, so I think that'll be a treat for you. And then
I've heard it's good.
Yeah, and then you know, Blue Mound is a really cool Rayner in Milwaukee that if you're there, you should check out. You know, very average land, to say the least. You know, pretty dismal property, but the green complexes are so good that it makes it just such a fantastic golf course and, you know, ultimate template hole golf course.
Yeah. I was able to play there during the USAM at Erin Hills. That was the secondary course, so that was really cool. That was honestly one of the first Rayner courses I'd played. So, I mean, that was kind of one of those aha moments where I was like, wow, this stuff is, like, really cool. I need to kind of read up and see what these guys were thinking and, you know, why they did this stuff. So that was that's a pretty special course to me. So I definitely like that spot.
Yeah, I think it's a testament of – somebody said to me one time that they said, have you ever played a golf hole, a great golf hole that didn't have a great green?
Yeah, probably not for me. I'm big into green complexes, and Seth Rayner's by far my favorite. I think he did a really good job of giving you a lot of pinnable surfaces, and I just don't – I mean, for me at least, you play a lot of his golf courses, and you get a lot of putts from long distance that you feel like you can make. I just think he made the golf he just made golf really fun, in my opinion. It wasn't crazy hard. You see some of these architects now, they make the green complexes so hard and so challenging, which I understand at some courses, you know, if they want to host a major championship or they want to host a PGA Tour event, you know, the architects aren't in charge of exactly what they want to do all the time. You know, there's other people that influence them and tell them this is what they want. So, I mean, they're getting paid and they have to do, you know, what they're being told. So they're not, you know, in charge of that all the time. But for the majority of the time, I just think the green complexes from today's architects are pretty bad if you like Seth Rayner.
Yeah, it's they definitely go to extremes. And
for,
you know,
sure,
where they kind of try and defend par. For the,
yeah, which I think is stupid. you know.
I think the same thing is that, like, they try and defend par. That, you know, I really believe in the width that they have, you know, started to do. But
yeah,
sometimes the greens get so wacky where, you know, if you haven't played the golf course like 15 times, you don't understand where you're supposed to hit them. And that's also not really fair.
Yeah, exactly. I just got, I was playing Frederica last week. It's I want to say a Fazio course in Georgia, in Sea Island. And on my first hole, I'd never played the golf course before. And the first, the 10th hole, the pin was back left, and my caddy was just like, yeah, I mean, you don't want to go in the water left. You just kind of want to keep it in the middle of the green. And it's this huge putting, you know, surface. And I hit it right in the middle of the green, and there's this huge hump, like a 10, I don't even know how big, but it was like, it was to the point where I had like a 15-foot putt, and I couldn't even keep this thing within 8 feet of the hole, no matter how good of a putt you hit. Unless you made it, it was going 8 feet away. And yeah. I just, you know, for the most part, I mean, there's exceptions, but for the most part at a Seth Rayner course, you know, most of the time you get on the green and you feel like you have a pretty good chance to make a putt, which is a lot more fun, I think.
Yeah. And I think one of the things that Rayner, from my experience, was so good at was creating like small subtleties. And, you know, you hit what you think is a perfect putt, and it might not move exactly the way you thought it did. And it just, you know, it drives you bonkers, but it's like these little tiny breaks that are almost harder to read than, you know, seeing the sweeping break is easy to read that putt. Whereas, you know, you have a 10-footer and you're trying to decide, you know, is this a, you know, half ball out versus, you know, inside the hole? That's almost a harder putt sometimes.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, I almost think some of that stuff, it goes to kind of what I was saying earlier. He gave you so much flat putting surface that, you know, originally that putt that you're talking about might have been a straight putt, you know, the year the course opened. But over time and, you know, as ground settles and stuff like that, those little subtleties where the greens were flat, they get those subtle little breaks, you know. And like you said, you know, that stuff can drive you crazy when you got a 10-footer that you think is, you know, dead straight, and it just kind of can wiggle either way. So, I mean, I love flat putting surfaces. You know, generally flat. I like a little slope on them, but you know, some of the stuff that I see today, I just can't stand. Especially when I read that some of these guys, you know, their idols, you know, in the architecture world were some of the guys that we've been talking about.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's clearly that the ideas width and then defense of the green is kind of the fad right now.
Yeah, for sure.
So we got a lot of Twitter questions. So I want to jump in here, and you know, some of these will be quick ones, and some of these will be a little bit longer. So you know, we'll jump in, and the first one's from Kyle Nathan. And he's asking this question for a friend. It sounds like there's some money on the line here. If Tiger plays 15 events this year, how many cuts will he make?
I mean, if he plays 15 events, he'll make 14 or 15 cuts, I think.
All right. I think I'm in the 13 to 15. Yeah. I mean.
Yeah.
His made cut streak is what I think is his most impressive. I don't know whether what do you think is his most impressive feat? Is it the amateur, you know, three straight juniors, three straight USAMs, the made cut streak, the, you know, wins, you know, what stands out to you as his most impressive feat?
I mean, all of them are pretty unbelievable, and I think all of, you know, his 79 or 80 wins, whatever he has, and his majors and his, you know, amateur USGA titles and his made cut streak, all those things will never be, like, even sniffed again, I don't think. So they're all unbelievable. I don't think I could pick one, but the made cut streak is unbelievable. I mean, the guy, when he's healthy, he knows he has the knack to make the cut and get into contention. Like, you know, he's that good. He's that special of a player. So if he's healthy, he's not going to be missing cuts. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah.
Too good.
It's crazy to think that, like, during that streak, his worst weeks were, like, T20.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's just...
It's crazy.
Just that much better than everybody else. But, you know, now he's... When he's playing his best and he's healthy, I still think he's just as good, if not better, than everybody, you know, of those top echelon players. So, yeah, he'll make a bunch of cuts.
Yeah, I agree. So this one's from Old Tom. Shout out to St. Andrews here. But who do you wish to work with / do the construction of the Buff Club?
Myself and probably my dad more than anybody, but I mean, if a big time architect wanted to get involved, I mean, I would be open to working with, you know, some of those guys, you know, the Dokes or the Core Crenshaws. I would just have to make sure that I do the greens.
Yeah. So this one's from Tony Deere. Another architecture nut. To what extent do PGA Tour players notice, consider, evaluate course design, and can they explain why a course is good or bad?
I don't know. I mean, I only know of a handful of guys really out there that really, like, talk about it or even bring it up and stuff like that. I know Johnson Wagner is a guy who I've, you know, spoken to throughout rounds, and I remember playing with him at the Barclays this year, and I mean, the guy shot like 62 or 61 or something like that, and the whole round we were talking about, you know, golf course architecture and stuff like that. But I mean, I think there's a handful of people out there that appreciate it and get it, and then I mean, I think there's a big chunk of guys that you know, they don't really pay too much attention to it. They just, you know, go about their business, and each of those is fine, but I'm not really too sure.
Okay. This is kind of along the same lines. Why don't you think more pros are publicly expressive about architecture? And this is from Drew Nedzinski.
Yeah, again, the same thing. I feel like, you know, there's a handful of guys out here that do openly talk about it and express, like, what they think. And then I think there's a big chunk of guys that really don't care. You know, they just have other interests, which is fine.
I think it mirrors the general population of golfers.
Yeah, for sure, for sure.
It's all right, so we covered half of Chris's question here, which is what courses are on your bucket list. What's your favorite CB Rainer Banks template hole?
Oh, man. I don't know if I could answer that because I like a lot of them.
Yeah.
I really like, you know, Redan's and Beeritz's. I will say, however, the out, like you see at Fisher's Island and stuff like that, could probably be my favorite hole, though, in the world. I just think it's exciting and fun, and it's, you know, you can hit a bad shot and get super lucky. You can hit a good shot and just have it turn out average. So that Alps punch bowl, or even a punch bowl in general, I guess, I think are pretty awesome.
Yeah, punch bowls are pretty cool. It's they're kind of making a comeback. I know the drainage is always an issue with them, but now you see more modern architects creating them. I played if you're out in Philly, I played this cool Gil Hands course called Applebrook. He had this really cool short par four. It was like 300 yards. And it was like an Alps punch bowl. It was a blind green, and, you know, it had, you know, big mounding bunkers that, you know, protected the front at like 260, and then this great punch bowl green. It was one of the cooler holes that I played on the year, just from like a, you know, fun to play hole.
Yeah. Southampton has, it's a Rainer course up in the Hamptons, has, you know, I'm sure he got the idea from that hole. It sounds exactly the same.
Yeah.
Pretty good one.
Yeah. All right. So this one's from Buck Walter, and he says, your best finish on the PGA Tour came at a Rainer design. Coincidence, or does a good architect help your play?
I mean, I think it's just a good golf course that makes you do a lot of good things. So I would say his architectural features do encourage just a solid, you know, game from tee to green. Yeah, we'll go with that.
Okay.
Shout out to Buck. He was the one who helped me get the copy of the Evangelical Golfer. So he's the man.
Okay. Yeah, that's probably the hardest book to find. And all of
yeah,
golf course.
That's pretty unbelievable.
Yeah, it's unreal. It's if anybody can get their hands on it, highly recommend. So if the U.S. Open had a rota like the Open Championship across the pond, what courses do you think should be in it?
I think Oakmont and Pebble should be in it. Like every 5 or 6 years. I just think they're extremely fun to watch. And definitely Oakmont should be in the rotation every 5 years. But, I mean, you got courses like, you know, Shinnecock, again, who should probably get it every few years. You know, those courses like Torrey Pines, it does a good job. I think they had one a few years ago that was pretty exciting. But man, my big ones, I just looked at this last night. I hope Brookline does a good job, cause I think that's a really cool one. Marion did a good job. I think those courses like Marion and the Country Club should probably only get them every few years because they're just they're, you know, small, and they're probably not big enough for what the U.S. Open has kind of become. But, yeah, I would love – I loved Bethpage, and I love Baltusrol. I think Baltusrol and Bethpage should get it more frequently. I don't think Bethpage or I don't know if either of them will get them anytime soon. It looks like the kind of – the PGA's kind of snagged both of those sites. But those are really good ones. I think there's definitely a good, solid group of about 15 courses think they should ever go anywhere else besides those 15 courses. I don't think, you know, I don't think Chambers, it should go back there. I don't think, I think it will, but I don't think it should. I would rather see it at Oakmont every year before I see it at, you know, Chambers Bay.
Yeah.
I feel like Oakmont, a lot of people like watching the U.S. Open there for some reason. It's just, you know, it's brutal. And at the same time, like this year, you saw when it rained, people were eating it up. So I think you can play that course a lot of different ways. You don't have to be a bomber. There's a lot of holes under 300 yards, but they can get rough up and they can get the greens crazy fast and crazy firm. So that's probably the one that sticks out more than any other one in my mind. And then I did play Shinnecock earlier this year, and the stuff they've done to redo that place I think are going to be really, really exciting for the Open.
Yeah, I think everybody wants to, like, you know, to talk about golf courses, but I think the ultimate defense anywhere is got to be firm and fast. And if it rains, it you know, you guys are just too good. And not, you know, you're going to eat up almost anywhere, right?
Yeah. Yeah, you see it every week, you know. It doesn't matter how long the course is, how long the rough is, how long anything is. If it rains, the guys play it well. Another course that I would love to see Riviera get a U.S. Open. And then I'm excited to see the U.S. Open at L.A. North. That's one of my favorite courses in the world, so. I'll be really excited to see that in a few years.
I know Riv's got the USAM this year, so that could be in the cards.
Oh, they do?
Yeah.
Wow.
I
gotta
actually get my indoor putting mat out and start grinding. You know, I need to get out there.
Exactly. Yeah, wow, that'll be really cool. That's a really cool golf course, and I think it can be really, really challenging. But as you've seen the last 2 years at the LA Open, it's poured rain. The first, you know, Wednesday night and Thursday, and the guys have eaten it up. So that just kind of – that goes to show that any golf course can kind of be taken apart if the conditions are right.
Yeah, that place was one of my favorite courses I played this year. It's just – there's very few weak shots on it. The par threes are really unique and interesting. I mean, that's four's got to be out there. It's got to be one of the best Redan holes in golf.
Yeah, that's a pretty cool one, huh?
Yeah.
The problem the last couple of years, like I said, it's rained so bad that you can't play it quite the way you'd want to play it. It seems to always be right in between clubs. And so when you have to hit a shot at the pin instead of playing it off the side, it just kind of takes away a little bit from the hole. That's a course where I've talked to a lot of people. I would like to see that course with no rough. I would like to see the whole thing be fairway cut because the rough really isn't rough because it just sits right on top every time that I've played it. And then it also – but it is just long enough to kind of stop balls from going into the trees and stuff like that. So that would be a cool course, I think, if the whole golf course was fairway cut. And, you know, you could probably hit balls that ran out a little and got into some trouble. I think that would be a pretty unique place because it looked like it used to kind of be like that.
Yeah. If you look at old aerials, there were a lot less trees. And, I mean, everywhere I think was a lot – there was just so much less rough on almost every golf course.
Yeah, for sure.
So this one's from Ghost of Hogan. Biggest surprise about the tour so far?
Biggest surprise about the tour?
Yeah.
I'd probably just say how nice everybody is, you know, how nice all the guys are. You know, whether you hear stuff in the media about certain players, you know, everybody has their perception of how people are going to be. And I just think after, you know, a couple of years out here, just seeing how genuinely nice all the guys are to each other, you know, how good everybody gets along, basically.
Yeah, that's a lot of camaraderie. It seems like everybody that works for the tour is really nice, too, for the most part.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, everything kind of associated with the PGA Tour, they do a pretty good job, so it's nice to be out there.
So, you know, he also asked, why the dancing feet when putting?
I couldn't really tell you. It's just how I've always been.
Yeah.
I guess it kind of – I don't really read putts too much, so I think it's just kind of my way of kind of feeling it out, seeing,
yeah,
you know, what the break's doing around the ball.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So then we have a bunch of interesting ones here from Nick Johnson, not Zach, geez. And they're kind of like a rapid fire. So all of these are based off of tour courses. So,
okay.
Best tee shot on tour?
I would probably say 18 at Pebble. That's a pretty cool one. It's kind of like almost like a holy type feeling out there. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah, can't really go wrong with that one. Best green complex?
Well, we didn't get to play it last year, but hopefully we'll be back this year. But number three, the Beer and Screen at the Greenbrier is probably one of my favorite green complexes or holes, you know, throughout the year. So that's a pretty good one.
The best single hole, you know, from a, you know, entire hole, what do you think the best hole on tour is?
I would probably say 17 at Sawgrass just because of all the aspects of it. You know, you got the huge crowd. It's a neat little hole. It's challenging, but if you hit a good shot, you know, you're going to make it too. And it's kind of one of those holes you're thinking about the entire round, whether guys admit it or not. You know, from the time you get there, you're thinking, where's the pin at? What wind is it? You know, what kind of club am I going to be hitting? And you see a lot of drama there. So I think that's the best hole we play probably all year.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great interpretation of McDonald's short. It's hit it or else.
Yep, you know? Yep, so, pretty good.
So best three-hole stretch.
Best three-hole stretch. Oh, man. 16, 17, 18 at Sawgrass are pretty good, too. I think that's a really cool, you know, gives you a chance to score, and at the same time, people – occasionally as well. So that one's pretty good.
Yeah, lots of risk reward from die. So best front nine.
Best front nine. I don't know. God, there was so many that are I don't know if I could give you nine the best front nine. I don't know if I could even give you the best course. They're all pretty, there's a lot of good ones. So I'm going to plead the fifth on that one.
All right. I'm going to assume you're going to say the same for the best back nine, or is there one back nine that's just awesome?
Man, I wish somebody would have given me choices to choose from, because I probably would have been better at that.
Yes.
Best back nine. I feel like I should at least be able to answer this. Man, the back nine – dude, I don't even know.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's a lot of good ones. I could probably give you the best back nine of not a tour course, but
let's hear that one.
The best back nine, what's it called? I can't even remember the course's name. I played it during the PGA after I missed the cut. I would probably say Somerset Hills. The back nine there is pretty fun and pretty cool.
I feel like that's a course that flies under the radar. I haven't played
it,
but
gosh.
Everything I've seen, it looks just spectacular.
Yeah, I mean, I've been on the record saying that I'm not for sure. I'm saying it's in the conversation for if you had one course to play for the rest of your life, just one. You know, you could pick one course that you had to play every round at the rest of your life. It would be in my discussion for that course because it's just, I mean, it's awesome. It's fun. You know, there's tons of different holes. It's just, you know, it's extremely fun and challenging in some spots, but you're going to make birdies. You know, the views are amazing, you know, some of those trees in the fall. And then it's just cool. It's a cool little vibe out there.
Yeah, Tillinghast used a lot of template holes out there.
Yeah, he did. That's a really cool course. I really like that. A lot of people are surprised when I say that, because I think a lot of people, like, it kind of flies under the radar, like you said. And, you know, some people I talk to and say that, and they're like, what is it? You're not going to say Augusta or Pebble Beach or something like that. And, I mean, yeah, those courses would probably be in the equation, you know, in the conversation. But, man, I had a good time out there this last time I played there. And it was in such good shape. You know, it played the right way. It played firm and fast. And, you know, balls were rolling, and you could play the ground game a little bit. And I think that kind of just goes into how much fun I had out there.
Yeah, I think it's one of those places, and you see there's a bunch of them all over the country, but it's a course where the membership knows how good their golf course is, and they don't care if anybody else knows. You know,
yeah, exactly.
They're very content with their course, you know,
yeah,
being not talked about and them being the only ones in on the secret.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the type of people that I want, like, at my course, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, I've said it a bunch, and I'm not afraid to say it. Some of the courses on the, like, top 100 rankings, you know, I could name so many courses that should not be above Somerset Hills on that list. And, you know, same with, like, Maidstone and some of the other courses, but they are. And I think those type of clubs, I just think, like you said, the membership is like, we don't really care. We know that this place is unbelievable. And,
yes,
you know, that's the type of people you need at your club.
That's what I say about Shore Acres is Golf Digest has it number 99. And I'm like, if there's 98 courses that are better than this in the country, like, you've got to be kidding. Because I've played, you know, a lot of great courses. I haven't found one that, like, I could say is better. You know, I think they're all on the same level, but I know that it's a lot better than a lot of the courses on there that I've played.
For sure, yeah.
But
sad, but true.
I think it's almost impossible to rank golf courses. You know.
Yeah.
It's but it is possible. I think you can put them into tiers. You know where.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what I was just gonna say. You can kind of put them in, you know, A, B, C.
Mm-hmm.
But tough to rank them.
Yeah, it's but hey, I really appreciate you coming on and giving us an hour of your time here today. You know, we'll best of luck in 2017, and you know, hopefully we'll have you on again after a win or you know something really good.
Yeah, of course, anytime. Enjoyed it. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, for sure. For anybody that doesn't follow Zach, he's one of the best Twitter follows if you're into PGA Tour golf and golf course architecture. I'll put his Twitter link in the podcast page as well as the Buck Club. So thanks a lot, Zach, for coming on, and we'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, no problem. Have fun.
All right. Bye.
See ya.